Welcome to the SearchHealthIT.com podcast, where SearchHealthIT.com editors interview leading experts on IT strategies for healthcare leaders.
This is Don Fluckinger on site at the AHIMA convention in Atlanta, Georgia. Today, I'm joined with Gavin Krumenacker, Vice President of HIE Services and Business Development for MRO Corporation of King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, as well as Chief Technology Officer David Borden. Thanks for joining us today, gentlemen.
Sure.
Thank you very much, Don. So, what I'm interested in talking about today is the difficulty of keeping substance abuse and behavioral data partitioned from the clinical because of compliance reasons. And I know that a lot of your HIE customers and other interested parties in healthcare are struggling with this now. How are they solving that? How are they keeping things straight for the benefit of the patients as well as the compliance? David, why don't you go ahead?
Let me start on that. This is David. There's two main approaches. One's a technical approach, which is to work on filters, a combination of filters and tagging. Tagging would take place in the EMR. Somehow the EMR gives the capability to say this type of information in the record is related to behavioral health or HIV or substance abuse. And then filters are, after you've done the tagging, for those areas that may not be tagged, you run a second layer of protection to kind of look for codes or keywords or things like that, so as to provide a kind of double layer of filtering to hopefully keep all that information from flowing through to the exchange. That's one approach, and that's still a work in progress, and it's not 100% effective. So the other approach, and we just heard about this at the Pennsylvania State HIE's plenary session. It was this past week just outside of Harrisburg, where about 120 stakeholders got together from around the state to talk about the progress of what's going on with various private exchanges in the state and where they want to see the state HIE take over. So one of the sessions was just on this subject of super protected information. And the two largest private exchanges that are operating in the state, one is run by Geisinger and one is run by UPMC. And they've been in operation for a couple of years now with a lot of activity, as opposed to the state HIE, which is just finally getting started. Their approach to this, both of them, is to take a opt-in, opt-out. And if they don't get, they basically get every patient to sign a consent when they're seen at the hospital that their information can be put onto the exchange, and they go down the list, substance abuse, HIV, behavioral health, make them initial it, and they gather these things, and if the patient has signed everything, then they can go on the exchange, and if there's anything that they haven't signed, they're just simply off the exchange. So it's a kind of a broad brush approach, but it's what they felt they've had to implement in order to keep on the right side of the legal issues.
And then I guess on the other side, how difficult is authenticating the users who are accessing this information? Is there a special second layer for that kind of protected data, or is it all sort of in one pot with the clinical data?
When you say authenticating the users, do you mean the that's kind of talking about on the disclosure side? Are you
talking about
the requester side?
Who is accessing this data, and how do you know that they have the rights? Is there a special extra level for this sensitive data?
That's a good question. I'm not sure the answer.
It's still in progress, work in progress.
Yeah.
It's still in progress, and to David's point about the, sorry, this is Gavin. to David's point about the Pennsylvania session that we were at last week, there was a lot of discussion about this, you know, how the two largest exchanges in the state are currently handling it, but a lot of discussion about how other exchanges might handle it. And I think it actually illustrates one of the key that this is, you know, one area and one of many key operational challenges, if you will, that many of the health information exchanges out there are having. You hear sometimes a lot about the, you know, financial sustainability challenges that some of the exchanges may have after grant funding runs out, but there's a host of, you know, pretty thick and, you know, pretty complex organizational challenges that many of them have as well, just to figure out as this whole marketplace evolves.
What about interstate exchange of HIE data? When's that going to happen? I know there's a big cluster of varying state laws that sort of complicate things, but, you know, from your point of view as a vendor of HIE services, when do you think it's going to happen, or will it ever happen?
It's happening today. I mean, the core part of MRO's business is actually transacting health information, protected health information, many times across state lines. Year to date, we've exchanged over 1.3 million transactions of medical record data between our healthcare clients and external third parties. Those third parties range from patients and providers to groups like insurance companies, the government, law firms, etc. About 40% of our transactions are to patients and providers. So it's actually something that we're doing every day, and we, you know, on an operational basis, you know, live and breathe the different state regulations associated with those types of things. At a sort of macro exchange level, I don't know that there's a lot of volume that you're seeing there yet. A lot of the exchanges are doing a lot of great work in working with their healthcare clients and compiling records and compiling stores of records to be able to exchange. But in many instances, some of the interconnections between the exchanges aren't there yet or haven't fully been established yet, that exchange is happening at that level. One of the areas that you do start to see it happening with is with the Direct project. Mm-hmm. If you're familiar with Direct Secure Messaging. Direct Secure Messaging is a platform through which essentially providers and, you know, certified and identified providers have a secure mechanism through which they can exchange protected health information to support transition of care to providers. So, you know, a great classic example would be if you're on a skiing vacation in Colorado and you break your ankle and have to go to the emergency room, you know, your primary care provider could theoretically email your protected health information to the emergency room so that they have a good understanding of exactly what your background is and things that they should be aware of. There's a number of other ways in which we're helping clients in that space as well.
It's interesting you bring up Direct. I always have a hard time figuring out if it's sort of a transition standard on the way to something much more robust and complicated, or if it's going to be, you know, something that lives aside of complicated XML transfer, you know, for years to come. What's your take on that?
I think the latter is, if I had to predict, would be the case, because there's always going to be a call to have that level of control. The future of query-based HIE is very uncertain at this point, and but the, you know, Direct Exchange, even though in some ways there's more query-based exchange going on in these private networks, and Direct is still very early and hasn't quite gotten to the point of adoption, it's going to get adopted quickly starting next year when all the EMRs are going to have to build it into their systems. And you can see the activity starting to build, and we have kind of an eye onto that because of the fact that we have a HISP ourselves, so we're starting to see that level of interest. You're going to have this tool that's going to be available, and I don't think it's going to just get shunted away and put in the closet, even if query-based exchange does get over all of these technical problems and becomes very active and successful.
And my final question, how is meaningful use driving health information exchange? I mean, is it? I mean, you have over the next few years many providers coming online with programs for patient engagement, view, download, transmit, and also portals have to go up. I mean, if the measure says 50% of patients must have access, then probably 100 will, right? How do you offer offer a portal to half your patients? I mean, obviously,
right, but you'd have to give it to the whole.
How is that driving your business from your perspective?
This is Gavin again. So I think, you know, to answer your first question, is meaningful use driving health information exchange? I think the answer is absolutely it is, and in a very positive way, right, towards supporting the triple aim, as you hear many people speak about. How is it impacting our business is we see health information exchange as a extension of our core business that we've been supporting the marketplace with for the past 10 years of disclosure management. It's really starting to shift a lot of that exchange from what traditionally was, you know, CD or paper or fax or electronic. About 75% of our transactions today are electronic, but it's really starting to shift all of that to all of the transactions of health information to the electronic world. And we're actively engaged in that. We're making a number of different investments. We were very proud to be Meaningful Use 2 certified within the past 2 weeks as a component of EHRs for our patient portal capabilities. We've talked about we're actively involved with direct trust and direct secure messaging, and are really looking to help our clients in what we would refer to as practical health information exchange. We're working with them to identify real areas within their business that they can drive operational improvement or efficiency improvement through health information exchange and implement that. So if you will, along the case of small wins to start to build momentum within those entities for health information exchange.
I'll just go back to the question about meaningful use, specifically stage two. I think there is some recognition, I don't know how widespread it is, but that you know, the direct standard in some way may have undercut query-based exchange in terms of the way that's been rolled out in meaningful use stage two, where I think there was some expectation that in stage two hospitals were going to be required to join a query-based exchange, and by replacing that with these direct requirements, a lot of the HIEs, and at least the public ones, have felt a little bit abandoned by ONC. That's, you know, there's still stage three to come, and I think both direct and HI are going to be pushed very hard through the Meaningful Use program.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for your time today, gentlemen.
Thank you. We really appreciate it.
Good talking to you.
Thank you for listening to the searchhealthit.com podcast. For more information and resources about healthcare technology and electronic health records, please visit searchhealthit.com. Thank you.